Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Insane in the membrane.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And today I'm joined by the brilliant Will Robbins. Here he is.
Good morning, people.
It is morning. I apologise for getting you out of bed.
No. I've been up for hours prepping.
Oh, really?
No.
Nice one. How was Christmas for you? Have you had a good time?
Christmas was lovely. I went down to a place called Somerset, which is where I grew up. I saw some family. My mum lives on a houseboat down there, which was interesting. That's quite a new thing. And then, saw my dad and a few friends.
Oh, amazing. Whereabouts in Somerset?
I was born in Frome, which is, if people don't know, I say it's quite close to Glastonbury. So about 20 minutes drive from Glastonbury. So yeah, I spent a lot of time.
I know exactly where you are.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law lives in Shepton Mallet. So we were down there the other day when it was all the crazy flooding.
Yes, Shepton Mallet. I grew up very close to that town. We used to call it Shit and Smell It, because it was a bit of a shithole.
That's what I love about human beings. Even though we've progressed with technology and everything else, there's always little rivalries between neighbouring towns. That's still that tribal thing.
There's definitely that. The town, 5 minutes from the town that I grew up in, they were just like arch enemies for no reason whatsoever. We're like, you can't hang out with them. They're from Castle Carey and we're from Bruton. Very bizarre behaviour.
I think, I don't know if it's because maybe there wasn't a lot as much going on when we were younger. I don't know. Especially when I was younger. I think there was a lot more time to have hatred for the next town because there wasn't much else to do.
We didn't know any different, and we had to create problems because that was fun. We're like, oh, no, we don't like them. We can't hang out with them. They're from a different school. You know, that was a big thing as well. Different schools.
It makes no sense at all. When you really break it down, what was funny about that, like the rival school thing, is that I had mates in the rival school. So they'd all be like, we're going to meet them in the park and we're going to do... Yeah, but we never sort of... It was like outside of school, we'd see each other. And they were like, we nearly kicked off the other day. I'm like, yeah. He goes, did you go? I'm like, no, I never went down. I didn't want to get my head punched in.
It was
ridiculous, really.
I remember the school sent us a letter round when the fun fair came to town, or when the fun fair came to the next door town, then they sent us all a letter saying, do not go. Because it always kicked off when the fun fair was there. That's where all the fighting would happen. I would obviously not get involved in any fighting. I'm not built for fighting. But, lots of my mates would. We've got an official letter saying, do not go.
Wow. We should have done, because, that when the fun fair used to come to our town, it always used to... The local pubs would be sort of tricky places to go. It would just be, just that air of, this is not going to be good. It's not fun. The irony.
It's not fun fair. It's unfair fair. Yeah, it's terrifying sometimes.
And no disrespect to anyone that works at the fun fair. We're not slagging you off. We're just talking about our experiences about when we were growing up.
Yeah, it's our problem.
It's our problem. We were down in the... Yeah, so I went down the other day to Shepton Mallet with the crazy rain. And, oh, my God, I didn't realise it could be that bad down there.
What happened was were cars getting swept away and stuff?
Oh, it was like that, like rivers, like actual rivers. Roads had become rivers. And they were boarding up. I remember getting into town, into Shepton Mallet. And then I was like, because we've just had a little baby. So I was like, Kate and her mum, they can have the baby and they'll just sit for a bit. And, you know, and I thought, I'll just walk around the corner to the pub. I'll have a pint while they're doing that. And I was like, oh my God, you can't go out. This is nuts. It's just, it was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't remember it being like that when I was younger.
I don't think we can handle a British country. We can't handle any sort of severe weather change. Whether it's cold, whether it's wind, whether it's water, we just crumble. And we're like, we didn't expect this. And yeah, we're just unprepared. And it's mad when you hear about people actually, you know, losing their lives. They're like, oh, we lost two people in that flood. It's just not a fun topic, but yeah.
No, but I know what you mean. And it's for some reason, we have this, I don't know if it's a British thing, where we just assume that the sun's always shining on these isles. You know, but it's not. The weather's, we're living on an island and the weather changes within an hour of itself. So we're not prepared for any of it, as you said, you know. But I remember Brendan Dempsey, and I've said this before, Brendan Dempsey said, this is a place where we will spend 150 quid on a pair of sunglasses, but we won't spend £3 on an umbrella.
Yeah, no, I like that. I've never bought an umbrella in my life. I've stolen a couple. I've stolen a couple, but never bought one.
I think umbrellas, they're much like books. They kind of just float around. Like, nobody really owns them.
Yeah,
they just float around and you find them.
No one's too upset when they lose their umbrella. They're like, ah, it's gone. Yep, I was expecting it at some point.
Yeah. You just go, oh, fair enough. That's that then. And I'm sure I'll find another one. It's not like
when you lose your 150 quid pair of sunglasses. You're like, fuck, never again am I going to buy sunglasses.
Oh man. So so you grew up in Frome.
Yeah.
And what was that like growing up in that small town like that? I mean, I grew up in a town that was not too far from London, so you didn't feel too disconnected.
I loved growing up in the sort of countryside. I was in a small town, but it was pretty, you know, quiet down there. But saying that, though, I really enjoyed growing up in the country. When you get to the drinking age and you start going to the pubs and stuff, you know, it's so boring down there. There's just not a lot to do. So everyone sort of gravitates towards the pubs. And then when you get to a certain age, there is a lot of people. There's just drugs down there. There's a lot of drugs. People don't know what to do with themselves. They discover drugs and they're like, well, this is fun. You know, we've been walking around in a field for most of our childhood. This is something different. So, yeah, there was a lot of that. And I just felt like as soon as I hit, I went to college down there. But as soon as I hit, I don't know, 20, I was like, I had to get out. I really wanted to go to a city like London, which I did. But and there was no jobs, really. Once you get out of school, all of my friends were sort of tradies or had some sort of labouring job, and I wasn't built for that type of work, so I had to go to the city to look for an office job.
How did you find it growing up with? Because of your height, I don't know if this is going to sound clunky. I don't know how to ask. Do you find it difficult?
I was in school, primary school, and I was pretty much the same height as people. And then people started having growth spurts, and everyone sort of suddenly shot up, and I sort of stayed quite a short height. I'm about 4'10" now, and I started noticing that, and I was like, oh shit, I'm different, and I was standing out, and I could kids would sort of ask me questions and stuff, and I think I did worry or panic a bit, and that I was standing out from the normal bunch of people. But I don't know, I had such a, everyone in my family is average height, so I don't know, it wasn't really spoken about a huge amount, and I don't know, I think I must have been a bit scared about the future, and is this going to be okay? But do you know what, those school years, I actually had quite a good time. I was so, I don't know what the word is, but I had a lot of friends, and I was, and I was obviously the funny person, and I would make people laugh before they could even begin to sort of take the piss, so to speak. And I had lots of, I don't know, I think I made friends with the bullies essentially in secondary school.
Yeah.
If there was like a big kid or a kid that looked hard, I would just make friends with them instantly, and it would just bam, we're mates. So there was a lot of that going on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in hindsight, maybe it was, I didn't realize, maybe it was tiring or a bit worrying for me, but when I was that age, I didn't know any different. And you just go with it. I've never had sort of depression or anything like that. I've just been cracking on with it and sort of getting people on side quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find that sometimes people patronise you? Maybe. Like when they first meet, because they don't know, they've never met someone like you before, so they don't really know, so they try and overcompensate maybe.
100%, I have noticed that, and people, we are a rare thing, you know, people under 5 foot, you know, that's a rare thing. I've met a handful of people, you know, short like me. So even when I meet short people, I'm like, wait, there's another one. And then I should go talk to him, or you know, even I act a bit differently. So I completely get it why people would do that, and I have noticed people it could be patronizing, it could be treating me slightly differently, and yeah, that doesn't feel good. But you know, I have to put myself in these people's shoes, and then I got a taste of it when I met another short person, and I was just sort of just speaking, like asking all these questions to him, and I was probably patronizing him, to be honest. I don't know. Yeah,
I think it's that we're so, because we don't want to offend, so worried, and then I do remember the first time I met somebody who had dwarfism, and I'd never met someone like that before, I did the whole thing where I sort of crouched down to talk to him. And I found it wasn't till afterwards, I thought, oh God, why do I need to talk to them? It just threw me. I didn't know.
But the thing is, I think crouching down to talk to someone, you know, especially if it's a noisy place and you want to get into my ear, I think it's absolutely fine. And I think people do overthink these things. I think if you were coming from a genuine sort of like, oh, let's just have a chat, genuine place, they would have known that. I think, you know, I've had dickheads come up to me being like, oh, mate, you're short, can I get a picture with you? You know, like that is that's not coming from a good place. So whatever they do is wrong just because of their, you know, intentions. But, you know, someone crouching down to me and just to have a chat, that's definitely not an issue. That, you know, if they're just coming from a good place, it's like,
it's as you say, I think I'd rather people were overcompensating, and for a good reason, rather than coming up and taking the piss. So there is that. I think that's with comedy, because I've met so many different people from so many different backgrounds now. It really does help you with socializing. They're just the basics of socializing, because so many people have got so many different things going on, or they're from different places, and so you just get used to meeting different people, and in the end you sort of you get used to it, and it's a it's a wonderful thing. So I think this is what I'm always saying to people, like, go out and meet people, go out and meet your mates, go and have a coffee, go and do this, because it will help you with your mental health.
Meet people outside of that same friendship group you had, you know, as a kid. You know, that those people are probably great and that's all good, but get, you know, hang out with different people. And like you said, comedy is great for that. It's such an eclectic bunch of, you know, I don't want to say misfits, but, you know, it's a hell of a bunch of people from all walks of walks of life. And you know, I sometimes look around me in the groups I'm hanging out with in comedy, and I'm like, I would never, ever choose to hang out with you, but I fucking love you. This is great, yeah.
yeah. We've talked about this before on here when we had the lockdowns. The one thing I think that a lot of us comics struggled with was that we'd lost our little universe of, because we don't, not like you said, not necessarily misfits, but we're an odd bunch, really, because of what we do. So we sort of, we found each other and we were like, oh yeah, my people. And then that kind of got taken away. We all got separated up and we were like, oh shit, I've lost. It wasn't even about the gigs. It was about the fact that we lost those connections, that safe little space where we could be odd together.
Yeah. What I love about stand-up comedy is, you know, we can be stood at the back of the club, all in a row of us, waiting to go on, and you're looking at the lineup, and every single one of us is just completely, you know, different background, different, you know, shapes and sizes, all different bits of shtick, you know, we're all kind of, but we're all the same in the head in terms of like what we're working on and what the goals are. And I feel very connected to, you know, comics in that sense. It's a lovely sort of camaraderie, and that, yeah, lockdown was tough not having that, definitely.
What got you into comedy? What made you want to be a comedian?
So I was definitely the funny one in school. That was all I cared about, was making the kids laugh. Couldn't give a shit about education. I didn't plan it that way. That's just how it was. I felt like it was very important to have friends and make people laugh. I remember that I was in maths once and Mr. Gillingham was getting pissed off with me. I had the crowd in hysterics, and he lost his temper and said, right, that's it, I'm sick of this, Will. If anybody wants to learn, you come next door with me and we'll continue mass, and if you want to stand here and listen to this idiot, Will, you stand here. And I think I pulled the bigger crowd than Mr. Gillingham. I think that was a little kind of like, oh, maybe I should do something here. But I think I came to London when I was like 20. I worked a few jobs, but I was always scared to do comedy. I always wanted to do it, but it took me such a long time. I was so scared, and I couldn't get over the line. And I think it wasn't until I got into my first serious relationship and I sort of fell in love for the first time. And then my missus was like, just do it. You can do it. Go and do it. So she pushed me to do it. When I was like, I don't know, 27, 26 or something. And then, yeah, and then as soon as I did it, just loved it, out every night. And she was like, could you stop doing so much stand-up, please? I was like, well, you bloody... Yeah, so that's how it all started, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I've said this before. You know... You want to do it again after the first time you do it. It's there's a switch that goes and you go, oh, this is what I'm gonna do now. Whether it went badly or well, you go, I'm doing that again. And it just ignites something within you. And then I'm 20 years in now. I started 20 years ago in October. And
amazing.
It was only recently I've gone, fucking hell, 20 years. I've just been, because I've been so focused on like the next gig. It's just flown by because of that initial switch getting switched on.
20 years. That's brilliant. Are you doing Edinburgh this year?
No. We just had a baby. So
Oh, yeah,
can't
nice.
Do the
congrats.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I didn't expect to be a dad again, but here we are. And he's a little smasher. Although, all we do is put fluid in him, and all that happens is fluid comes flying out of him. And, you know, if you had a car like that, you'd scrap it.
Yeah, take that in. All the lights are on, flashing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just going, oh, maybe I'll just sell him for parts. I don't know. But here we are. So, yeah, are you doing Edinburgh?
I'm sort of, trying to get a venue at the moment. I would love to do it. I'd love to do my first hour. I'm just trying to get a venue and see where I go from now. I'm booked into lots of festivals this year, smaller festivals. But, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll work it out. If I get a good venue, I'll be up for it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you said earlier that, you know, you grew up with good friends and things like that. So you strike me as someone who's very positive, a very sort of, yeah, positive outlook, and you just sort of crack on with stuff. Do you find that, is that the case, or do you find it's every now and again, you're like, oh, what's the point?
Obviously, I have these, the sort of, down days when you're like, oh, fuck sakes, this is a hell of an effort, life. But I'm positive. I think I've worked out how to be happier over the years. You know, I'm early 30s now, and for many years I'm definitely a people pleaser, and you know, from my 20s throughout my whole 20s. I would be the sort of like quite sort of loud and like social butterfly and like life and soul of the party. And then I suddenly just got to about 30 and I was like, this is really tiring going out and behaving like this. And I don't think I was being quite myself. And I just got really tired, and I felt like I was putting on an act, essentially a show. And I sort of cut back on the drinking and the partying, and you know, I would still go out, but I just wouldn't get smashed. And my sort of old friends would be like, "Are you all right, mate? You're all right. You seem a bit down." And I'm like, "No, I'm fine. I'm just not putting on a show. I'm a bit more relaxed and mature. Yeah. And this is me. I don't need to be that party boy anymore." So that was a big sort of turning point for me, and I sort of like got into swimming and stuff like that, and I'm leaning into being a civilized adult, you know, going to bed early.
the one thing that this has come up a few times is that sleep, how important sleep is. And
love it.
And I've noticed now that people are going out and having a good time, but during the day, this old fashioned idea that we had to be up all night and then wait for the sun to come up and be smashed still. And people are, there's a thing called, it's called day fever that Reverend and the Makers are starting to do. These are day like discos. There's one in London I'm going to go to next month. And I think you're done by seven. Ridiculous.
But are people drinking there, or is it like a sober thing?
No, people, they're drinking and doing all these things, but it means they'll be in bed at a reasonable hour. They don't have to try and find taxis at 4 a.m. You know, it's as it should be.
I think that is brilliant. And, you know, when people say, oh, what do you do for your mental health or your wellness? I just say two things, sleep and water. It's all you need. You know, it's simple. But, yeah. Late nights kill you. But are you getting much sleep with the baby?
Not really. And we've had a tough week this week because we had this gastroenteritis thing going around. So the other night my car broke down on the way back from a gig. So I rang and was like, look, the RAC are coming, don't know where it's going to be, but blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I didn't get in until 6:30 in the morning. And when I got in, Kate said that she'd been puking and pooping all night. I'm like, oh, God.
Chaos.
So I got in and then sorted the baby out. And yeah, this week has been chaos. That's why I look like I've been slept in, let alone having any sleep. It's been awful. But, you know, it'll improve. Things will happen. He's a chilled out little dude. It'll be fine. But yeah, sleep, so important. Drinking water. Who knew?
Right, it was right there in front of us, and both of those things are free of charge.
You could just do it, Will. You could just grab just grab some water, and you'll be fine. It's incredible.
Drink the rainwater.
But I don't drink enough, and I forget. And then when I do, my body straight away just goes, yeah, that's what we needed. That was the one.
Thank you, Rich, for watering us. Yeah.
But you're doing great stuff with Ben. That looks great. That's a really nice, I like it because it's like very, it's called The Lovely Boys. And it's just, it's like two mates hanging out. I love that. It's such a nice thing.
Thank you, Rich. We really enjoyed doing it. I think, me and Ben Cohen met on the stand-up circuit about 7 years ago, and he was probably the first person. I was like, oh, I could definitely hang out with you outside of comedy. And I think we were living together during COVID, and then we were like, right, we're not gigging. A lot of people started to make content during COVID, and we were looking at the content, and we were like, oh God, it's all just about the news, or it's all about COVID, or it's about Boris Johnson. And we're not political at all. We steer clear of that. And we steer clear of topical things as well. And we were like, what do we like? And we both said, you know, for instance, both of our favorite film is Aeroplane, you know, which is the king of slapstick and you know, play on words and silliness like that. And we were like, right, we want to make sketches that are kind of feel good or wholesome or weird or funny. Mm. If they're any of those things, then that's our bag. What about doing that? And he was like, yeah, I want to do that as well. So yeah, that it started in lockdown, started bashing them out, and yeah, it just kept going. Yeah, it took a while to get a couple of followers, but yeah, it's going well. We still like we love doing it, and yeah. We're doing it. And we've got a Radio 4 commission as well. So that's this year.
Oh, well done. Excellent. Excellent. Excellent work. Well done. That's brilliant.
Cheers, mate.
That's what you want. You start doing these things and you hope it goes somewhere. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love them. Go on.
I was just going to say, I told a couple of people, yeah, we've got a Radio 4 series. And they were like, what? Most of your sketches have no talking in them. It's just silly faces and music. So yes, we will be doing a lot more talking, obviously, because that won't work on the radio. But yes.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I think you should do it. Just do it as you do it. It just be silence for however long the episode is.
Yeah, no one's doing that. Like,
no, no one's doing that. Not for a long time. But you should do it. 20 minutes. Ooh. Yeah. It's that. It's what I like. I like that. Is that, that those? That's it. Is wholesome. It does make you feel good. It's that. Yeah.
the best comments that we can get on our videos is, I don't know why I like this, but it's making me feel good, or something like that. It's like, those are the best comments when the people don't understand why they like it, but they just do.
Yeah. There's a comic at the minute called Joe Pera. I think that's how you pronounce his name. American guy. And he's got a series on I think it's on Adult Swim. And he's just this lovely man that's got this little life in this little house in this little town. And every episode is him, like, there was one the other day, he was lying in bed and it was raining and he was talking to us about how to go back to sleep, things you can do to get yourself back to sleep. He's got this really gentle little voice. And then there was another one the other day where he was washing up. And he discovered they played Bubba O'Reilly by The Who on the radio. And then he couldn't stop listening to it. And he couldn't stop listening to it. And it was like this little man that had just found this mad song and he was just like smashing his house up. But I was watching it. I'm like, why do I like this? This is just nice. And I think with the lovely boys as well, it's nice. And it's such an antidote to the anger that's around at the minute. You know, the whole world seems to be falling apart.
I think it's needed.
Yeah. What you're doing is needed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. You know, and things can be just nice. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, if we've made someone sort of crack a smile, that's a lovely wholesome thing. You know, that's good enough. There's so much crap out there, and we don't necessarily have a message. There's no message, but just be nice and be nice to each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's all. And that's such a wonderful thing in a world where everybody's having a go at each other, and friends are having a go at each other. You know, I had a conversation I had with a friend of mine that got really heated. We were talking about, you know, what's going on in Palestine, you know, with Palestinian people, and I was like, and we were just shouting at each other, and I'm like, oh my God, this doesn't help. This doesn't get anything. This doesn't change. It just means friends are fighting with each other.
It's embarrassing when, yeah, I've seen a couple of my friends arguing about it. It's just like, it's not helping.
Not helping at all. And you're going, and like, to the point, I'm like, why are you shouting at me? Why are you shouting at me? I didn't do it. I'm in full agreement with you. I don't think that innocent people should be killed. I don't understand why we're arguing. You know, so that's why it's nice. I think people now are getting to a point where they are looking for nicer things. They're looking for that escape, just that, which is, so when your videos popped up for the first time, and it was like, I like this. This is nice.
What are these two weirdos doing being lovely to each other? What's that about?
Well, I didn't really know Ben, but I knew you, and so I was like, oh, that's Will. What's he up to? And then I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's really cool. My favorite that's nice. There's a clip of a car crashing and the driver gets flung out. And he ends up in a pool. That's one of my favorite ones of yours.
I can't even remember that one. Oh, yeah.
I think you did it. You were in a pool. You might have filmed.
Exactly. Yeah. A horrific car crash. Man flung out of the car. Turns out to be Benny, and he hops over the garden wall into a swimming pool. Nice.
Yeah, and you just give him a shot.
It's so silly.
But that's what you'd want your mate to do. That's what you'd want your mate to do. You've had a horrific experience. You don't want to necessarily talk about it straight away. You just want to go, yeah, mate.
Yeah, drink. Crack on. That, well, that happened. Right, let's move on now.
What do you make of the it seems now the conversation, mental health conversation, has been cracked wide open.
Yep.
And it seems like we're all doing it. We're all doing it. How do you feel about it? Do you think it's a good thing, isn't it? It's good that we're all chatting about it. And
I think it's 100% a good thing. We're talking about it more. We're sort of allowing ourselves to feel down or bad or not 100%. And that's I think that's a good thing. You know, my parents would never talk about that. You know, my mum might have had depression her whole life, but it was never a thing. It was never spoken about. She might have just been down or unmotivated for, you know, most of her life. So I think we're heading in the right direction. I don't know, what do you think about Gen Z? And you know, someone said all of them have got a diagnosis. Is that because they've been on TikTok and they've diagnosed themselves? I don't know. You know, will it go a bit too far? That's the, like we like to do, us humans. We go a bit too far and then we rein it back in.
I think that's it. There's always an overcorrection where, like you said, the generation before didn't talk about it. The generation before me definitely didn't talk about their feelings. And, you know, and then we started to, and then the next generation are now, they've gone way out and they're like, oh yeah, I've got this, I've got that, I'm this and that. And I think to be honest, there was a moment for a while and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. I was at comedy clubs and I'd watch each comedian before they'd even made a joke. They just list all these things and you're like, look, I get it, but write material about these things. So they're just going, I've got this, and this. And I was getting a bit annoyed. But then I realised I was only annoyed because I was struggling with stuff. It wasn't them at all. I didn't have a problem with them at all. It was all myself. I was fucked off and I was going through some shit. And then once I had that realisation and then started to really look into it and I started to go, oh, do you know what? This is where we're at. As you said, we're now, it's the other way where we're all self-diagnosing and we're all got this, we've got that, and then it'll kind of level out again, but it'll be in a good, it's in a good position and it'll be in a better position. It's just where we're at the minute, where the floodgates have opened and we're all like, oh yeah, that's it. Because we did, I probably do have ADHD and I probably do have something else and all these, because I've never addressed it, just thought I was odd. And now, you know, it turns out that's what it is. So it's good. It'll level out. It'll all be fine. I'm glad we're having the conversations. That's the main.
Have you been for an ADHD test to see?
No, not yet. Not yet. But Angela Barnes keeps telling me every time. This is typical. So I messaged Angela Barnes at Christmas and I said, at a new year, I went, thank you for everything this year. She took me out on tour with her and I really appreciate it. You've been so lovely. And then she sent me back a long WhatsApp that I have not read yet.
No.
I'm such a fucking...
No, mate, let's read it now.
It's just because I'm like, oh, I'll read. I'm like, oh yeah, I saw the first bit and I went, oh, that's nice. And then, I don't know, something happened and I got distracted and I went off. And then I'm like, oh, fuck. And I mean, and now it's popped up. I'm like, I must reply to that. But she'll get it. She understands. She's the one person who's going, Rich, you've got ADHD. Stop. Just go and get it sorted out. So, yeah, it's good. I think it is a good thing. I think comedians need to stop making it a personality maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're headed in the right direction. I do sometimes worry because I do look after my sort of mental health. I try to, and my body, but I just feel like there's so many things that I could be doing, and it's overwhelming, and I get sort of like panicked, and then on Instagram, there's all these reels like, wake up at 4 a.m. and look at a candle for 10 minutes and then meditate and then swim. And then, like, you know, if I did everything that I've read or seen on Instagram, I wouldn't have any time free in the day. I would just be doing, you know, wellness stuff all day long. So that's overwhelming. You need to sort of like, you need to pick two or three of them and try and do them daily. It's just like picking what works with you and going with that and being happy with that or changing it. That can sometimes feel overwhelming. Mate, I feel like I've got ADHD as well. I would like to go and get tested.
Yeah. It's just, my wife, bless her, she just laughs. She goes, there's a cup of tea in the microwave again. And you're like, oh, yeah. I just, there's so much going on. I don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, is it ADHD or is there just too much now? Are there too many things to be doing? And we just get, like you said, overwhelmed. And maybe it's that. Maybe I'm just overwhelmed. You know, I should be up in the morning. Like you said, up at 4, glass of water, 20-minute walk, come back and write your thoughts down, then throw them in a bin, and then burn some incense. And I don't know. It's just too much. Like you say, it's like, well, now it's midday and I've done fuck all.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like you say, pick one or two. Glass of water, brilliant. I think that water, first thing, I used to do this thing where I'd go for a walk straight away.
That's nice.
I'd just go for a walk.
What, straight out of the house?
Come back. Straight out of the house, no breakfast, just shorts on. Oh, wait, not even that. Just get dressed, out. And I used to walk around the park 20 minutes and come back, and then I'd have breakfast. That was a nice thing.
That's a nice thing. Maybe you can do that with the new baby. A little 10-minute stroll.
Yeah.
Or it's a hassle trying to leave the house with a baby, isn't it?
I might just chuck him in a bag.
Yeah, put him in the rucksack, mate. Bag.
Just have his head poking out the top and just like Yoda.
Yeah, and go for an aggressive jog around town. People shouting at you.
Puke.
Mate, your bag's open.
You can't have that open in London, you mad man. Things get stolen. But that's, so do you think? You think you've got ADHD? You think you've got
I do think I've got ADHD. I will speak to a doctor. My head gets really busy and overwhelmed. And like you said, small things like replying to a text message can take a couple of weeks. But I find if I just don't drink too much and I exercise and journal, my head feels relatively unmessy, which is what I try and do. But obviously it's peaks and troughs.
I think that's it, is that assumption that once you start doing a thing, you're just going to keep doing it. And sometimes it just doesn't pan out that way. I mean, but again, my wife said to me, she was on and on about invoicing. And I'm like, I've done my invoicing. She went, yeah, but who owes you money still? I went, well, I just got it in my head. I know, I can feel it. I just know. And then there was a couple of times when someone paid me and I went, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, Rich. So now we have a spreadsheet and all the information goes into the spreadsheet. And as you've just said about journaling, just getting it out of your head, it just frees up so much space.
Get it out the head. She sounds great for you. She sounds great for you, mate.
I think I've married an assistant rather than a wife.
You're a team. You're a team unit.
That's what it is. That's what it is. But you said that your mum's just moved to a houseboat.
Yes. Right? She sold her little flat in Somerset, I want to say 2 years ago, and she's bought a houseboat, which is, it's absolutely tiny. There was no loo or shower on there for a while, which was a bit of a worry. 70-year-old woman on a houseboat on her own, but she's got a She's got a loo on there now and got a few bits and bobs on there. But yeah, she's happy on there. I don't know how long she'll be on there for. But yeah, it's a bohemian lifestyle. It's just a bit of a, for me personally, living on a houseboat is a daily battle. You know, you wake up, you're cold, you need to put the wood burner on, get the fire lit. It's like surviving the elements. It's like, you know, you don't just sit and put the TV on in a house. But yeah, she seems to be enjoying it.
Yeah, and she's 17, she's doing that. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's good. I didn't want her to do it for various reasons because of her age. But, you know, I now come round to the idea. I'm like, maybe this is good. She's 17, but maybe this keeps her sort of busy. She's, like, battling with bits and bobs on the boat. If she was sat in a small flat, you know, people can, the aging process can creep in on you quicker if you're sat in an armchair 8 hours a day.
Yeah, I think you're right. Having lived in a house where you had to get up in the morning, make the fire, you know, the house is freezing and yeah, it does get you going in the morning. And I think, yeah, being, you know, I've seen firsthand what happens to people when they're surrounded by a chair that will push them up, a bed that will push them up, a stair lift.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you get to a point where your muscles don't work anymore. I think as worrying as it might be, because it's your mum and she's a, you know, she's an older woman. Yeah. I think this might be the making of her, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to spin it so that to look at the positives rather than the negatives, but you know, for the time being, good on her. Why the hell not?
Yeah. Is she quite like that? Having living down that way, having, you know, been around Glastonbury, the actual town, not necessarily the festival, it is quite kind of crystals and
quite a lot of material about crystals and incense and dream catchers, which I do on stage. But my mum is definitely sort of quite eccentric and bohemian. She's moved house, you know, I want to say 8-9 times since she split from my dad. And one, yeah, she like lived in India for a couple of years when I was about 18-19.
Oh, wow.
And then she came back. And now, yeah, the final move, not the final move, Jesus Christ. But she's on a houseboat now.
Oh, mate. Yeah. How did you find it? When your mum and dad split up, how was it? Was it kind of like, oh yeah, well it's a good thing, or did you struggle with it? I know some people have different experiences.
Yeah, I think I was just young enough to be slightly unawares. So I was probably 10 years old, I'm guessing, and my brother was 12. So he felt it much more. He was really in the thick of it. I was a bit unaware. I was like, oh right, we've kind of got two houses now, and what does that mean? We get two Christmases and two bunches of presents, you know. And that was where my head was at, you know, self-centered little narcissist, you know, like a lot of kids. But as I got older, you know, mum and dad, so very different now, and we could never imagine them together anymore. It was meant to be.
Oh, really?
or not meant to be. You know, they can get on now, they talk, but they were just kind of going down different lanes in their life, and you know, not meant to be together.
Yeah. No, but your dad's not as bohemian as your mum.
No, my dad's sort of, you know, my dad's not as bohemian at all. He's an antiques dealer from Somerset. So do you remember Lovejoy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do remember Lovejoy, yes.
he might be a bit like Lovejoy. He just sort of, you know, loves a sort of dinner party, loves an antique, bit of a character, loves a glass of red wine. But he's lived in his house for 30 years. You know, he's always at the end of the phone. It's a bit more stable and less bohemian. Yeah.
So do you think you've got a mixture of the two? You've got like the kind of stable and a bohemian, quite a nice mixture.
I think I've got a nice mixture of them both, but I'm more like my dad in terms of like, you've got to work, you know, you've got to be working all the time and, you know, keep busy, keep socializing, see your friends. That was an impression of my dad, but yeah, I'm more like my dad, but I love my mum. She's partial to a crystal. You spotted that. Yeah.
I think it's just something about being from that neck of the woods. My dad's side of the family are from Newton Abbott and from down that way.
Yeah.
So there's always been kind of talk of spiritualism and crystals, and then the mother of my first children, Lisa, her family, they're all spiritualists and they're all crystals and things like that. And then I see, and then Kate's mum, you know, we go to her mum's place in Shepton Mallet, and there's crystals and there's cards. There's a box of chakra cards, and it just makes me laugh every time I walk past it. I just go, chakra cards. Chakra can't help cards. It.
So do you think there's a connection with sort of middle-aged white women, maybe single, who are into these sort of chakra cards or crystals a bit more than the average person?
I think there's a definite connection with, I've got friends of mine that are very much into crystals and spiritualism and tarot and things like that. And I think it's a thing that keeps them positive. It's like a belief
we all need that,
which is what keeps you going. Yeah.
One of my first jobs in Somerset was working in a crystal warehouse, and that it was just like quite a big warehouse, and it had all these thousands of different types of crystals. And I would have to read the orders, box up the orders. And then because it was a local sort of business, all the orders were, you know, five minutes down the road. So I would then get in my car and deliver these crystals. And, you know, it would literally be middle-aged white women called Denise. And I would be like, hi, Denise, here's your crystal order. Give them to them. And then I'd be like, yeah, good luck getting the kids back. Because, you know, they will be quite eccentric. But yeah, it was fun. Yeah, there was a lot of that. And the Crystal Warehouse was a funny job that I did for a few months. Yeah.
The place must have been buzzing with all those different crystals, with all their different powers. The place must have been...
Yeah, and I didn't think of that. Like the energy in there.
Yeah. It must have been all over the place, because that one's for positivity, that one's for something else, and that one's for just chaos.
Maybe that's where I got my ADHD from, that crystal warehouse.
I think it's nice. I think it's lovely that when people find something to believe in, because it's so easy to go the other way. I know personally. Very recently, I was talking to Fatia Al-Ghori at a gig recently.
Yeah,
I just said to her, I said, you know what? I said, I have let the bitterness get in a little bit lately. I've let the bitterness in, and I just needed to have a word with myself. And it gets to, we're only human, aren't we? Happens.
Yeah, I think it can creep in, and that's perfectly normal. And we just need to have a little break, little word with ourselves, take a little rest, a little holiday or something, if we're lucky enough to do that. Yeah.
I think it's difficult because it's especially like, because what we do is so reliant on social media. It's very difficult sometimes. I'm like, oh god, I just want to stop looking at my phone for a minute. Yep. You know, and it looks like you're not doing anything. Like, and I with Kate, and she'd be like, can you just grab this? Can you just grab that? And I'm like, oh yeah. But it just looks like I'm just texting.
Doom scrolling. You know, yeah.
And I'm not. It's like, yeah. Or she will say, like we do say to each other, like, are you actually doing something? Or are you just doom scrolling and upsetting yourself? Oh. Yeah, come on. Well, you have, I think that's it. Communication. You have to actually say to each other, like, are you doing something productive or are you self-sabotaging and hurting yourself?
Yeah. I mean, screen time. I think we all need to get our screen time down. It's an embarrassment looking at my numbers on there. Yeah, the days and weeks that I've wasted. But just it's scrolling.
Easy. Yeah, but it's difficult, isn't it? Like you say, because especially with the lovely boys becoming so popular, it's, you know, you're interested and you want to see it doing well. So you're always, you know, you put a video up and straight away, you're like, oh, I want to. Is it doing as well as the other videos we've just done? Is it? And you get caught up in the machine.
Yeah, I remember when we did this sketch and it kind of went a bit mad on TikTok. It was me in a sort of glass box screaming, and it was like a 7-second yes. sketch. And I don't know why, but it went mad and it got like 60 million views on TikTok. Wow. And I remember that week, I was just, I was fucked. I was like getting my phone out every 20 seconds because it was just going shoom like that. I was like checking everything. Wow. I was like, I could not put my phone down. And my, I don't know, it was just, yeah, hours and hours and hours spent checking it, checking the comments, checking the numbers. You know, it was not a relaxing week. I was like, ugh. But yeah.
See, that's it, isn't it? That's what we want. You want that because that will then, as it has, it will lead on to good things. But the stress when it happens, because it's a funny old thing we've got ourselves caught up in. That you just as you say, if you get a minute to just come away from it, just for a bit, just, you know, just go for a walk around the park or just have a cup of tea. I don't know, just something.
Just try and use it. Don't let it use you, which it does use me regularly.
Nice. Do you find it exhausting sometimes? You must do, like you've just said, you go, like, oh, I just want to.
Yeah, I do, 100%. It's like I love filming and editing the sketches with Ben, but it's like, you know, the time in between when I'm just sort of at home and, mate, I scroll a lot. Yeah, just and make like you said, upsetting myself by comparing. I actually mute a lot of other comedians. Not it's nothing personal. I just try and like limit the amount of stuff that I see. Like, oh, they're doing that venue. Oh, they've got that gig or whatever. You know, I find it quite stressful. So I do mute quite a lot of comedians. Actually, I don't know if that's common.
I think it is common. I think it is. And as you say, it's nothing to do. It's not personal. It's I have nothing but love and admiration for everybody. It's just, it's that. And that's what was happening. That's why I had to mute people because, like I said, I let the bitterness get in. I was like, oh, what? Is it because I'm older? Is it because of this? And then I was like, hang on. You're flat out rich. You're busy. You're doing the gigs. You've got a podcast. You've got these other podcasts. You're doing things. What is it? And you go, oh, it's just, I'm getting caught up in that, in that shit. Yeah. Yeah. And the moment I admitted it was the moment I started to feel better.
Wow. That's great.
Oh, I'm being that guy.
It's good.
Yeah.
Good,
I'm with you, man. I've muted loads of people and I've muted loads of people as well. So, and if you're listening to this, which you're probably not because you've muted me as well.
you were saying earlier about the camaraderie and, you know, we're all in a group together. It is massively that with stand-up, but it is also pretty solitary and we are all on our solo quests or missions to get to certain points or to certain levels. And, you know, so it's a mixture of teamwork and completely fighting alone here. Yeah.
True. I think that might cause some problems as well. Because as you say, we're in our little universe, as we said, but also you're on your own. Bizarre position to be in.
Carnage.
So what's next for Will Robbins? What's happening, Will?
No, I just do. Yeah. So we're doing the Lovely Boys sketch show, Radio 4. We've got four episodes that will be coming out in June. So we've got to start recording in April, which will be fun. Yeah, probably going to do Edinburgh. But apart from that, it's just
brilliant.
Apart from that, it's just keep doing the Lovely Boys sketches, because that is what makes me happy, and that's when I'm feeling at my funniest. It's when I'm laughing the most. So that's what feels the best in terms of comedy. So more of that, basically. Grow the followers, work with more people, get more people in the sketches.
Do you know what? It's funny. I was about to say, I love it when I see other people from other sketches involved. Like I saw you with Joe Jacobs and
Tom Ward.
Yeah, Tom Ward. That was it. And it just, I was like, oh, that's nice. It's like seeing your favorite bands doing a mashup. It's like, nice. Yeah, that worked.
So we obviously did so many, just me and Ben, and then we were like, right, okay, let's open up the world. And we just want to, we want to get as many people in them as possible. This isn't a closed unit, we want to work with anyone and everyone. Just open it up, make it a little family. Yeah.
Lovely. What a lovely way to finish. Thank you, Will. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Where can we find you on the socials?
Instagram at Willie with a Y Robbins, double B. And The Lovely Boys is Instagram at The Lovely Boys _, or TikTok. It's just at The Lovely Boys.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Will.
Thanks for having me on, Rich.
Good luck with everything. Oh, mate, it's lovely. You're such an easy man to talk to. It's been beautiful. This has been Insane in the Membrane. That has been Will Robbins. I am always Rich Wilson, and we will see you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.